Well, greetings and welcome to Dividing Line. It is the last program of 2017. And I think I recall mentioning a year ago that I knew that this was going to be one of the fastest moving years of my life. And it certainly ended up being that way. And in fact, as I was reviewing the activities of this year, some of these things seemed like they were yesterday and some things a long, 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 long time ago. But I did want to take some time to look back over the year, see what's coming up in the future, and just be thankful. It's funny. I suppose right now, when I look back over 2017, there are certain what we would call negative things that certainly come to mind first. But thankfully, I'm just one of those people that, 10 years from now, it's going to be primarily the positive things that I'm going to remember, not so much the negative things. And in fact, it's a character flaw for me. I mean, there'll be times when, a name will come up or somebody will ask me to do something, and this person has ravaged me in the past, and I've forgotten. All I've remembered was something positive about them or something like that. I end up doing stupid, naive things because I try to remember the best about people and not the negative parts. And that puts me at a disadvantage in some circles these days. But certainly, I mentioned Wednesday evening at Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church when I did the Wednesday evening devotional Bible study. That I think it's good that the Lord has sort of built us in such a way, because of the way we live on this planet that circles this that star we call the sun. We have seasons, and though eventually we have to figure out what a year is, because those seasons are going to keep repeating, and we've designed holidays and things that help us to pass the time, see the passage of time. And I think it's good to have an opportunity to stop and think, something more than just Facebook saying a year ago this happened or 2 years ago this happened. Though I do like that, I'll have to admit, that is one of the nicer features of Facebook, is you have memories to look back on today. And half the time I look at it and go, I didn't remember that. That's actually one of the best features, I think, of Facebook. But I think it's good that the Lord designed us in such a way that we have these opportunities to think back and to take stock of where we've been, where we're going. So many of us are so blessedly busy today, under so much pressure, and it's so easy to just go into survival mode rather than progress mode, Because progress mode can require sacrifice. It can be negative in the short term and positive in the long term. And a lot of us we compromise and go into survival mode and start treading water rather than making progress toward the goal. So it's good to look back. I think one of the biggest problems with the millennials is that they don't look back. They don't have any sense of their place in history, and do not, I think, in many ways, honor those who have gone before them. Now, you can obviously, get into ancestor worship and silliness like that causes a problem, but there is a balance, and there is no generation more foolish than a generation that does not recognize its debt to the generations that came before it. And so it's good to look back. It's good to have an idea of your place in history, and both ancient history as well as the present history. That's the only way you can then look forward with meaning, make serious plans for the future, is if you can look back. And as Christians, we look back and see, well, what has the Lord been doing in my life? What is the process here? And honestly examining ourselves and saying, well, the Lord... the Lord has been doing this in my life, but he's still got a lot more work to do in that area or in this area. And very honestly analyzing where we are in our Christian life. And we all know there's not a single person in this audience that's going to sit there and say, you know what? I've been spending way too much time in Bible study and prayer and fellowship with the Lord. I need to cut back on that. I don't think there's a single person that would actually be able to honestly say that at all. And so here at the end of the year, especially in my adult life, and I hit the big double nickels last week or the week before last. See, it goes by so fast, you start losing track immediately. But once you're my age, you can just sort of go, yeah, well, see, here's my AMAC card or whatever. So I can do whatever I want. I can, you know, I'm not concerned about those things anymore. It's a good thing, I think, to take this time and to consider what the future, you know, in the next few weeks for the rest of the year. This year, 2017, fastest year of my life. No question about it. No question about it. But I knew it was going to be that way. I'm not the world's biggest traveler. The world's biggest traveler is actually in the studio audience today. But for me, being out of the country one out of every 6 days this year was huge. That was the first time that had anything even close to that had happened. I've never spent that much. I've gotten better at it. You have to. You either have to give up or get better at it. I've gotten better at it. I can adjust to things a little bit easier than I used to. But still, I knew that the schedule that we had lined out last year was going to mean this year was going to go by in a flash. The next 2 years can't go by that fast. They just can't. I've got to get focused on the work that I need to do in on P45, and so yeah, we're still going to be traveling. We're trying to put together. It's going to be so hard to do, and we've got to get to it immediately. But still trying to put together the round the world tour in May. Literally going round the world from here to London to South Africa to Zambia to probably Perth and New Zealand, and then back across the Pacific, literally around the world. Still going to be, you know, we've still got debates to do and things like that. We've still got the dividing line to do, but I have to become extremely focused upon other things. So I can't repeat this year. And we all know one of the main reasons is it was the 500th anniversary of the beginning of the Reformation. And one of the things that we need to start doing on program, not starting on the second, but maybe after that, we sort of stopped once I went over for the Reformation tour. We sort of stopped the church history stuff, and we hadn't gotten to where we needed to be. I actually have to go back. I'm going to have to go back in the archives and go, where had we gotten? Because I'm teaching church history at PRBC, and so we're in a similar time frame, and so I'm not sure where I was, but we need to go back and continue that, because I think rightly tried to point out that I'm a little concerned about all the emphasis upon October 31st, because that's just the beginning. That was just the start. There's all sorts of really important things to be thinking about, and I think we should have some big old celebration of the Marburg colloquy, and we should do something about the Worms. There's really no place to go for Worms. I think we showed you those massively oversized shack shoes that they have at Worms, which are just the dumbest things that have ever been put anywhere. But anyway, but there's all sorts of reasons to be, you know, continuing to celebrate the Reformation. And so I knew this was going to be a busy year. We had been planning a lot of this stuff for a long, long time. But still, it was amazing. So what did we do? Well, who could have known? You know, it's interesting to look back. January, we went down to Atlanta, and we went to the G3 conference, and we had a debate beforehand with Trent Horn of Catholic Answers, and it was very well received, and we did the conference, and AHA showed up, and Rich discovered it's probably not good to talk with AHA guys. Yeah. Just smile and say, have a nice day as you walk by. And then I went from Atlanta to Memphis. And little did I know that little couple days down in Memphis before I then went down to the Deep South Founders Conference after that, those couple days in Memphis were going to have such a huge impact on the rest of the year. Because, of course, that's when we had the dialogues with Yasser Qadhi in the mosque and in the church. And so that was, what, one, two, three, that was the fourth week of the year. So early on. Now, the kickback on that, there were some people. Sadly, one thing I will remember 2017 for is I've never lost as many friends in one year as in 2017. And one, I could tell that was happening back in November, December of the previous year, but some of the rest, just stunning. You know, I just never would have guessed just how on completely different pages we were as to our motivations for why we do what we do. And so, yeah, there was some pushback immediately. But it was May when everything took place. There was sort of a delayed reaction, but that was in January. And so we had G3, we had the debate, we had the dialogues with Yasser Qadhi and the Deep South Founders Conference. And then let me see here. The next thing, I pretty much had February to have it home. And then we did the Masters Academy International Conference, the pre-conference to the Shepherd's Conference in LA, and always enjoy meeting the people from around the world there. And it's amazing how much planning you can get done when everybody's at one place. You know, it's like, hey, you want to come to this location and do that? Hey, there you go. And there's that guy to talk to over there. And we planned all sorts of stuff and things like that. And then very, very shortly after that was my first run down to South Africa. And we do that, thankfully, through London. We have so many friends there in London. And London's just such an awesome place. I mean, you know, I've got my Oyster card, and you can get pretty much anywhere you need to go in London pretty easily. I think if I recall correctly, though, yeah, that was the one where at the end when I was in London... Yeah, that was in March. The last night I stayed at Heathrow, and that was the same night as the attack on the bridge there in London. And so I wasn't anywhere near. I mean, Heathrow is a good drive from there, but wasn't anywhere near it. But it was just, you know, that's the type of thing that was going on. And I didn't mention, I pretty much lost the first number of weeks of the year. I had been hospitalized at the end of the previous year. And so still trying to sort of get back to speed, even in these early months physically. But that was the first trip down. I was down in South Africa twice this year. And I've lost track of how many times I was in London this year. Again, in comparison to others, not much. But then April, remember April? What happened in April? Well, that was another one of those situations where, you know, someone contacts me. I think someone contacted me by Facebook Messenger. And, you know, we've got this situation up here in South Dakota, you know, with this group, you know, and they've like bought this town and it's really weird. And, well, okay, let's see if we can do something. And that, of course, was the INC debate. With Mr. Ventilacion, and what an interesting evening that was. We've contacted them about doing another debate, but I'll be perfectly honest with you right now. I've got to get somebody else to take this over because there is no way I have the time to be doing the stuff. I think I just may get hold of the guys up in South Dakota and say, "You already did this once. You want to do it again? It won't be in South Dakota, but." You want to do, you already know how to do this stuff. We'll just hand it to you. Oh, it's incredibly complicated. And the guys up there just had the right attitude about it all. So, I may seriously see if they wouldn't be willing to pick up the ball on that. And because I just need to be able to show up and do the thing. I don't have time to play the game. I really don't.
Actually, that's a great plug-in because they're three-digit South Dakota Apologetics.
Yeah.
We'll just change it, and they can have an adjunct down there.
San Diego Apologetics,
yeah, right?
Because we're talking about a debate in San Diego.
Yeah.
So
they
there
just
you go.
Go down there and take over.
Yeah.
I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah, so we've got the guys at Channel, but I'm also talking about the guys up in South Dakota because they really – they had to have a lot of patience Aaron and the guys up there had to have a lot of patience to put up with all the stuff that was involved with that. But anyways, that was at the end of April, and then we didn't – things got busy because in May, once again, back in London and in South Africa and no, that wasn't South Africa. This was over to Wittenberg. And so I taught at the wonderfully named German Shepherds Conference. We had been planning this one for a long time, and it had always been a chuckle that it was going to be the German Shepherds Conference in Wittenberg. They always have it in Wittenberg, but obviously in 2017, that made it all the more special. And great to meet all those folks, and I loved my plenary session with Martin Manton as my translator, because he and I just get along really well. Please don't hold that against him, but we get along really well, and we have fun with the translation. I speak some German, thankfully, and it makes translation into German all that much more fun because I can understand what the other guy's saying. And so it's when they sort of go NIV-ish on me, I can have some fun when that happens. And then I had one quote from some Pope or something, and Martin looked at it, and he can see my notes, so you can see the English. And he's like, I have no idea what to do with that. So it's sort of like, okay, let's see if we can come up with another way of putting it here. You know, it was that's been posted online too, but had a great time there in Wittenberg with the EBTC guys, and it was interesting. I was about the only person running in the mornings in Wittenberg. I had the place to myself. I mean, even the dogs were asleep. If you wanted to run someplace, nobody was going to get in your way. That was in May. And then, where was this one? Back to, was I gone that long? Was that long of a trip? Wow. That was long. I think that was one of the longest trips I'd ever had at that particular point in time, if I recall correctly. So yeah. Of course, during the summers here in Phoenix, it gets a tad bit on the warm side. I went up, as I normally do, as I love to do, as I train all year to do. I went up to Colorado in July, spoke at some churches up there while I was doing the triple bypass ride, Mount Evans, all that kind of stuff, and spoke in Littleton and places like that. Met, even had a group of Muslims come out to one of the churches I was speaking at. They just came out. They knew I was speaking on Islam. So they didn't come out to protest that or something like that. They literally came out to thank me for approaching the subject in a meaningful fashion, a respectful fashion, unlike so many others. And that was in July. That's a great, great time. I'll tell you, Colorado, right now, I'm not really into the cold all that much. So, yeah. But, come July, it's a great place to be rather than Phoenix. There's no two ways about that. Then back to South Africa and London again in August. Great opportunities down there. I'm so thankful for all the people down in South Africa that put up with my weirdness. I mean, there's a family down there that I stay with when I'm in Johannesburg, and I've got sort of, it really helps when you travel. See, I'm not like some people that can just go to all these different hotels and just adjust everything. It's really neat to get used to a particular place. And so that, you know, when I go up to Colorado, I stay with one family in Colorado. They put up with me every year. They're, you know, I'm part of the family there. But you stay in the same place. So when you wake up in the middle of the night, you know where you are, you know? And there's just sort of a lack of pressure there. I go down to Johannesburg. I stay with the same family in the same room. I know every running route around their neighborhood because, okay, it's Johannesburg. So it's a completely walled in neighborhood, or I wouldn't be running in the dark. I assure you, not in South Africa. I know every centimeter of every place that can be run in that particular neighborhood. And they just know to leave the key in a certain spot. I can just go and do my running and come back and all that kind of stuff. And it makes it so much more enjoyable and easy to travel when you have that kind of thing. And you just made such, you know, you end up making friendships in these places. And I think one of the reasons the friendships might flourish the way they do is they don't have to live with you all the time. They only have to put up with you for a while. And then you leave. And that's probably a good thing. But I think it was this one coming back is when I stayed at the Royal Horse Guards in London on the way back. Because I think the earlier one was where I stayed at a hotel not all that far away from it. It was a nice hotel. But they had had a fire alarm in the middle of the night. And we were out in the cold someplace. What's that? Doubletree? Okay. And that was in a really good location too. I mean, that was fine. But I mean, if you want to run around downtown London, if you want to go eat at Tortillas at Trafalgar Square, if you want to, you know, see the sights, there's just no place like the Royal Horse Guards. It's just perfectly located, and there's a tube station right down the block. And well, actually, there's tube stations all around that area, depending on which line you want to get on. And I had a lot of fun just running around downtown. Ran over to the Marian Martyrs plaque and the Wallace plaque. And now I'm bummed because I didn't realize how close I was to the Handel House. So that's the next thing on the list, is going and visiting the Handel House, which is well within running distance of everything's well within running distance, just about, depending on how far you're running these days. It's such an amazing city. It really, really is an amazing place. And it's even more amazing now that I've found decent Mexican food to eat there. So that's pretty good. But yeah, I think that was that trip. That's also when I went down to Durban, did the debate with Yusuf Ismail down there on election and stuff like that. So that was in August, and I knew I wasn't going to be home very long before we headed out again on the Reformation tour to Germany. And despite the fact that some of the people on the tour had an almost fatal case of Deutsche Phobia, I just really felt sorry for some people who will remain nameless in their Deutsche Phobia. We just rarely does Kelly, my wife, get to go with me on most of these things, but she finally got to go. And on the way over, we both managed to snag our upgrades, which was really nice. That helped a lot. Coming back, not so much, but going over is the most important thing because, you know, coming back, you can crash for a few days. About 10 days ago, 2 weeks or so ago, I posted the links to the video from the opportunity that I had very early on. We flew into Berlin, and I didn't know how these things worked. I had seen, for example, about what was it, a month and a half earlier is when y'all were in with Ligonier and Al Mohler and stuff. Okay. I had seen tweets and stuff. Hey, the program can't be operating right now. I need to turn the warp drive back on. Sorry. A second. There we go. All right. Whew. Oh, man. What? Yeah, yes, I see that. The warp core was dead. The dilithium crystals had died or something. I don't know. But we had to fix that. Anyways, I had seen tweets and stuff, so I had an idea of the various places that people were going, but I didn't have in my mind how this was going to work. And so one of the things I had done is I was going, man, we're going to be having to pack and unpack and pack and unpack. I need to pack so I can pack and unpack every night and move someplace else. And well, that's not how to do it. And that's not how we did it. So we stayed in Berlin, and then we stayed in Mainz, Weimar, and then in Frankfurt. And then you would take the bus to the various locations each day. And, that's the easiest way to do it logistically. Now, chronologically, it meant you were sort of bouncing around as far as Luther's life and stuff like that went. But that was, it's sort of like whenever you lecture on history, how are you going to do it? You can do it chronologically, you can do it thematically. You got to make choices. And so we get to Berlin, and the first day, Kelly and I run down to the Brandenburg Gate. And I know some of you are too young to have even been around when Reagan, stood outside that when the wall was still up and Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And we're sitting there taking pictures of the foundation stones that are still in the street from where that wall was. And, being a World War II buff, it's not the first time I'd seen it. I've been to Germany a number of times. And when I was teaching for EBTC the first time, they took me down there. And so I had seen it before. But it was just so, so cool just to go for a run through this really wooded area. And then all of a sudden you come out and poof, you realize you were in the East German part, the part that no one could have gone to before, and so that, that's a great way to start things off. But then you start, we go from there to Wittenberg. I've been to Wittenberg. I had spent days in Wittenberg earlier in the year. But what's interesting is even though I had taken the obligatory picture outside the door and things like that, I'd never been in the castle church. I'd never been on any of the tour things where you get to go in. And so what had been planned, and of course it's hard not to get your heart set on something, but you always know that things can go wrong at the last moment. And so you don't really want to really get your heart set on something. You want to go, well, if it happens, that's great. But it had been planned for quite some time that I would have the opportunity of speaking there. And I had seen pictures tweeted a month and a half earlier when Dr. Moeller had spoken in the Castle Church, in the high pulpit. And I was like, oh. And so I had actually talked to friends I have some good friends in Frankfurt. In fact, I actually extended my stay. Kelly went home before me so that I could speak at the Reformed Baptist Church in Frankfurt and, just try to be an encouragement to the Reformed Baptist brethren there in Deutschland. And so I had contacted them. And I had sent them some quotes that I wanted to use in the sermon because I chose to basically do a sermon. Obviously, it was historically based, but it was still a sermon. And so I had sent them these quotes, and I wanted to know if they could find the originals in Luther's German writings, which, of course, they did for me. Though in the process, they were like, man, those English translations you got, someone's, playing around with stuff here. It's not overly literal, and here's a better translation and stuff like that. Because I'd never been in there before. And so I knew Luther was buried now. I just didn't know exactly where. Well, if I had leaned over the pulpit, which I didn't do, but if I had leaned over it, you'd be looking straight down at Luther's headstone. I mean, he's right there. And so that was a risk on my part. It's a risk to throw some original language stuff into a sermon, you only have 30 minutes in the first place. And it was a little bit of a risk, but I decided I needed to do it, being right there. And it was fascinating. There is a room back behind. There's been a lot of modernization done basically on the back part behind the church. I mean, the bathroom that I went into back there was like Star Wars spaceship type thing. I mean, you know, automatic everything. It was sort of freaky. But there's this room back there where I got changed because I wasn't going to run around Wittenberg all day in a suit and tie, though some other people do that. I can't pull it off. So I got changed, and as I'm waiting to go, because there's like a dividing wall, and then you have the stairs that go up. I had not even gone up there, so I did not even realize until I ran into it that there was a swinging door at the top. So I was like, oh, I guess I need to get around that. Hope we don't fall all over ourselves. But I'm back there waiting to get started, and there's this guy who works for the church. And he's from America, so he speaks perfectly good English. Though most Germans speak much better English than we speak German. But that's been my experience anyways. And so he sees that I'm getting ready to go up because I'm all dudeed up and stuff. And he says, I don't want to put any extra pressure on you, he says. But just thought you might want to notice that when you stand up in that pulpit, you're on the same level as the statues of all the reformers in the room. And if you look at the video or the pictures, you'll see, you know, Luther's right over there, and then you got Melanchthon, and you got, you know, Bucer's in there someplace. They're all on the same level. And as you're standing in the pulpit, you're standing the same level with the reformers. Like, thank you very much. appreciate that comment right as I'm getting ready to go out there. I think he stuck around and listened, though, so that was good. Look, there aren't that many people that have ever stood up there and looked out over an audience in that room, especially if that audience is actually listening to you. And, you know, that's, I've described as a bucket list type thing. I mean, I hope the Lord preserves me in such a way that when I get to my old age, I'll still remember that. At least I've got a video. We can show it to me. I can go, oh, I'd forgotten that. I hope that's not what happens. But it was just amazing to stand up there and to look out. And I really hope that what I had to say was important. And we we did have, and I'm thankful we had a little buzz in the sound system. It wasn't all the time. And it sort of went away toward the end. But we had this little sound in the sound system. And that kind of thing really doesn't bother me. I've been a sound man most of my life, and so I understand things happen. But when we got done, I was talking with some of the brethren afterwards, and I sort of jokingly said, well, you know, we talked about the you could hear in the sound system. I said, I think that was Brother Luther spinning in his grave because a Baptist was preaching from his pulpit. I think that's... It was just high speed revs down there. But maybe after I quoted him a few times in German, then he's like, well, okay, the guy's not too bad. So we'll let him slide. That would have been enough, you know, but there was so much more came because that was very early on. That was like the second day. We started visiting other places and, you know, visiting all these different museums. I was pretty museumed out by the end. But it was fascinating to see the different kinds of guides we would have. And, you know, some are just doing their job. Some really obviously enjoy their job. And they're the ones that are the most interesting people to talk to and stuff. And we had this one guide that was just so friendly that we invited him to come eat with us later on in the day. You can just tell, you know, the people that do their job because they're getting paid to, and the people who do their job because they really enjoy it. It was fascinating to see that kind of stuff. But the places we visited, obviously for me, the visit to the Wartburg Castle was the next big thing on the trip. And do we have an idea, Mike, when that's gonna be available? No. The Fritz Erba video next week. Probably next week, hopefully, we'll be posting a link to, and this was, it's not just because they happen to be staying in the other room. This is, you know, trust me, didn't talk with anybody about this, and I'm the world's worst marketer. But I've already said this on the program. I've said this to other people in other contexts. One of the things that struck me was I was informed that I was touching on elements of the Reformation that many other people sort of avoid. The very first night in Berlin, I said, look, I realize I would not be welcomed in Geneva under Calvin. I would not be welcomed in Wittenberg under Luther. I would not have been welcomed in Zurich. Even Martin Bucer, I'm not sure, would have been overly kind toward me. And you have to learn to do history. You have to do the work. We don't, one of the, I had not thought of it before we got over there, but I think the very first night or the second night, I came up with the line, we don't want comic book understanding, a comic book understanding of the Reformation. We want to know who these men really were. We don't want to whitewash anything. And so what had happened was, I've got to thank Dr. Moeller for this. He had tweeted a picture while he was over there, a month and a half earlier. And when I had seen it, it had made a little light come on. It was a picture of this hole. And he mentioned that this is where Fritz Erba had been imprisoned. And I was like, Fritz Erba. So I, jumped online and go, oh, yeah. And I started doing some reading. I'm like, oh, man, I got to see that. I've got to see this. And so I let the folks at Sovereign know. I said, we got there. I'm like, I'd really like to see. Is this just a normal part of the tour? And they're like, Fritz who? I mean, that was pretty much, y'all had never heard of him before me, right? You had heard something, but the nice lady that took me there had not heard of this person. And so they made phone calls for me and said, yeah, it's like 50 cents to go up the South Tower and, see that. But yeah, that can be arranged. So I actually skipped Box House to get up to the castle early and go visit this site. And the lovely Kathy came with me. And we had some, we had to get all the tickets and stuff arranged when we got up there and stuff like that. But we finally get over there. And I'm nervous because I'm afraid of heights. And if I can see through steps and stuff, I mean, I could not make it up. Now, I probably could now, but back in the 90s, I couldn't make it up into the torch or of Lady Liberty, because you can see through the stairs, and I couldn't do it. That was too much for me. So I was a little worried about what we were going to be running into. Well, we plunk our 50 cents in, and it's 40 steps up, and boom, I look to my right, there it is. Now, we went all the way to the top later on, but there it was. And, while we were in there, a couple people stuck their heads in and sort of, but this is not the most popular location in the Wartburg Castle. I was just, I looked down that hole. They have a light down at the bottom, because they didn't have a light down there. It would just be a black hole. You have no earthly idea how far down that is. And I knew what had happened. I knew that Fritz Erba had been put in that hole in 1541 and died down there in 1548. 7 years. There aren't any windows down there. I mean, it's the inside part of that tower with no means of communication with the outside world. No light, no nothing other than that one hole. It's called the Terror Hole because you'd be bound and lowered down into the darkness. You don't know what's down there. You don't even know how far down it goes. And so I knew what it represented, and after we took some pictures of it and looked at it, we went on up to the top, and we're sort of looking, because it's beautiful views up there, looking around, and I just start blabbering about just the contrast. Here we stand in that tower, right above where Fritz Erba lived his last few years. And why was he down there? Because he had read the Bible that Luther had translated 150 yards over there and believed it. But because of sacralism, because of Constantinianism, because of the state church, the Bible that was translated over there, he believes it. The man who translated that Bible right over there, hiding from the imperial authorities in his day, never lifts a finger to get him out of that. In fact, supports his being in that hole down there. Well, of course, Erba dies after Luther does, but still, he was well aware of the situation. And that contrast, that contradiction, that historical reality, standing up there on the top of that tower, was just overwhelming. It was just amazing. And evidently, I communicated that with some level of fervor, because Kathy goes, "So you want to bring our people up there and talk to them about this?" Now, let me tell you something, folks. Let me tell you something. I didn't talk to anybody about this. There's nobody else out there that does these tours that's going to do this. There's not. They're not going to think about it. They're not going to care about it. It took work to, okay, we need to go a little faster through here. And even to the point where we're staying down there and Janica has a bag of 50-cent pieces so that we can get everybody through the little turnstile doohickey whopper thingy. So someone had to think about doing that. And what I didn't know at the time was, out of their great kindness, a wonderful banquet had been arranged, especially honoring Kelly and I, at the hotel just down from the castle. I mean, I wish I could show you a picture. I could, I suppose, it's on my thing. I have shown you a picture of it, but I mean, it's like the Knights of the Round Table type thing. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And so there's already timing involved here. And so now we're having to play with the timing and still did it. But the room's so small, we had to break our group up into two different groups because you can only cram, what, about 14 people at max, doing this number. And then in the midst of all this, Mike grabs his camera. One of many cameras, and the nice one, well, one of the nice ones, and tries to make himself a part of the wall because you need to try to have at least some distance and perspective, and videotapes, yes, right, Mike being the guy who can turn sideways and disappear, records my first presentation to the first group that's up there. And then they all leave and we send up the second group. And I try to, as closely as I can, sort of repeat what I did the first time around. The recording of that is hopefully what will get posted next week. And it's only, what, about 7 minutes? About 7 minutes long. I mean, it's short. But I think it's pretty unique. I think the whole Wartburg day was just incredible. And we invited the guy that had given us the tour down in Eisenach up to eat with us. And what I really liked is we invited our bus driver too. And it was just absolutely magical. I mean, the whole trip, everywhere we went, The only thing I really skipped other than the Bach House to get up to the Wartburg Castle was I skipped the Gutenberg Museum because I was trying to find a Bible to buy for our Muslim bus driver. I eventually found one, though the people at the Gutenberg Museum sent me halfway across the city to find a bookstore. When walking back, I discovered that there was a bookstore literally 50 meters, catty corner from, but they, I don't know. I guess I needed the extra steps that day or something. But even as it was, when I found the bookstore, big two-level bookstore, you ask for a Bible and they're like, Bible? Bible? Is that religious? And it's like, I mean, you're near the Gutenberg Museum. If that isn't a parable for what has happened to European society, I really don't know what is. It was amazing. So, and like I said, I stayed over one day so I could preach there in Frankfurt. Frankfurt is where we finished up, and had a great time there. They've posted the preaching and the translation has been posted, and that church just informed me about 4 days ago that they have obtained the rights from Bethany House and are now in the process of producing the German version of the Potter's Freedom. So that will be available in Germany, in German. So I'm looking forward to reading that. that'll be sort of fun in German. That'll be great to read your own stuff going, I think I should remember this. Yeah. So we had a great time, and I'll just tell you, like I've told you before, I asked the people on the bus, because I was doing these bus lecture type things, just to try to make it as valuable to everybody who came along as possible. I asked everybody, I think the last night, so if we did the rest of the Reformation, how many of you would want to come along? Vast majority of them put their hands up. And so we're definitely wanting to do that. Got back October down in Dallas. Some of you know AHA showed up even at the conference we did in Dallas. But that was another opportunity for me to spend time with Jason Lyle. And Dr. Lyle, I think it was on the 14th. Yeah, the 14th of October was a Saturday night. And I'm now looking. I have now put into my calendar astronomical stuff. And I can see now that was a fairly good night last quarter. So the moon's getting, when the moon's full, it's 25,000 times brighter than anything else in the night sky. So that's why during full moons or three quarter moons, not even really worth it. But it was a good night. And Dr. Lyle says, so after the conference is over, would you like to go out and do some stargazing? And I'm sort of like, wow, going stargazing with Jason Lyle. That's sort of like having Michael Jordan come up to you and say, would you like to shoot some hoop? You know, sure. Okay. And so we went out, set up his 14-inch reflector. And, you know, I was exhausted. Both of us were tired. It had been a long day. We had both spoken during the conference. I think I had spoken twice that day. But I got bit. I mean, I got bit by the bug. Because it helps that the guy you're going out with can show you Saturn and then sit there and start ripping off all the moon, the names of all the moons of Saturn, how big they are, and da-da-da-da-da-da. Jason Lyle is responsible for the fact that my main Christmas present this year was a 10-inch reflector, Dobsonian mount, go-to. And and I'm sitting there now. I start looking at moon phases, cloud cover, all that stuff, because it's like, when can I get out for a really dark night? Because there's some stuff in the Orion Nebula I'd really like to try, to, you know, that kind of stuff. And on my bike rides, I've been working in hours and hours of astronomy lectures. On right now, going through stellar formation and all sorts of incredible stuff like that. It's fascinating stuff. But that was in October. And then I went down to Texas. And for example, I spoke at Jeff Neal's church in Texas. Had a great time down there. It was great to get to get together with him again. And then I'm seeing flights. Oh, that's just flight back from Dallas. Then St. Louis once again. St. Charles. 17 years. The first weekend in December. Well, the first time we did it was actually during the summer, but. It's been the 17th time we've gone to St. Charles, and then I took a trip up to see the grandkids just a few weeks ago up in Las Vegas. So I've spent a lot of time away from home this year, and in the midst of all that, we had debates in Durban, South Africa. We had a lot of stuff going on. But you'll notice what I didn't mention in all of that. That was all the positive stuff. That was the traveling. That was, for the first time in my life, I am executive platinum on American Airlines. I won't be next year, I hope. But it is nice. I got to admit, it's sort of nice. You do get treated fairly nicely when you're an EP, I was sitting, if you fly to Dallas on American, there are 27 other EPs on the flight too. So you're not going to get an upgrade unless you've flown 500,000 miles that year. So you're back in the emergency exit row, at least, which is a fine place. In fact, it's almost easier for me to sleep there than it is up in first class because there's so much room to the wall. In first class, but in the exit row, it's right there, so you can actually sleep better. But I'm sitting there, and this, we used to, you know how old I am? We used to call them stewardesses. Flight attendant comes up to me and says, Dr. White, would you like something to eat? And I know why they're doing it, because you're executive platinum. But everyone else is sort of sitting around looking at you like, excuse us for being in the same row, It's sort of like, sure. and then you sort of eat it like this, Everybody else is sort of looking at it. Vultures sitting on your seat. It's a weird, weird situation. But what I didn't mention, of course, was starting as soon as I got back from Wittenberg, the first time in May, is what we will probably always refer to as, sadly, what we referred to at the time was the season of slander. Unfortunately, what we're going to have to do now is call it the first season of slander, or season of slander one, volume one. I have a feeling there's going to be a volume two and a volume three and a volume four, unless the Lord is merciful. And that is when the name Brandon House became much better known to me. And I had only known the name because of his association with Chris Pinto and the movies that Chris Pinto cranks out about Codex Sinaiticus being a fraud and the Jesuits are behind everything and that kind of stuff. And I knew that Pinto was on House's network. But I also knew there were some good guys on House's network, Justin Peters, Mike Abendroth were on House's network. And so I hadn't given the guy much thought. And within, I think it was 2 days after I got back from Wittenberg, was when the first program dropped from Brandon House with Osama Dakdok and just going after me as a useful idiot and all the rest of this stuff. And that's what started the whole IFD controversy, which, of course, up until that point in time, interfaith dialogue had always referred to liberals getting together with other liberals and agreeing that no one actually believed anything. And given that my conversations with Dr. Cotty started off by saying, that's not what either one of us can do. it's very strange that that phraseology has now been expanded out to have a meaning it didn't have very long ago at all. But that's when it started. And so over the next few weeks, you had a number of people. You had Robert Maury and Sam Shamoon. And then eventually, sadly, Janet Mefford got involved. I was up in Colorado with my friends on the phone during that particular debacle. And that's when it all you know, kicked off during that time period. And it stayed on full blast for far longer than most of these things actually last. I mean, let's face it. We live in a social media world, and even amongst Christians, things just don't last that long. I mean, people move on to some new controversy. Well, there's a lot of money and there's a lot of politics and money behind the people involved with this type of situation. And so it lasted far longer than most people would have ever expected it to. And to be honest with you, it hasn't ended. You know, people maybe have burned out on certain aspects of things, but believe you me, anytime I speak with a Muslim, the debate next month with Adnan Rashid will rekindle those discussions. And I've said before, I'll say it now again, Dr. Cotty and I, that's not the last time we're talking. And so that's going to happen again. And in fact, I've mentioned to you, I think I've mentioned to you, but I'll mention, if I haven't, I'll mention it now. Dr. Cotty has said to me, we not only need to do it again, but you need to have absolute freedom to not only ask me any question at all about jihad, Muslim Brotherhood, or anything else, but we need to be even less concerned than we were the first time about, we need to be straight up front in talking about specifically what separates us. And we need to be able to get into more theology the second time around. That's exciting. And I know that, especially outside the United States, the response to those dialogues was unanimously ecstatic, especially for missionaries working in Muslim countries. The doors that have been opened, not only for me, but for so many others because of that. Just astounding. I couldn't see that coming. And let's be honest, some of those doors would not have been opened were it not for the grossly adverse and grossly unfair and grossly edited responses that many people provided to that. And so, you know, in the midst of all the slander and everything else, it's real easy to wonder what God's purposes are. But, you know, I've pointed back to 2000 when Norman Geisler put out Chosen But Free. And my thinking at the time, oh, there's going to be so many people that are confused by this. And oh, you know, and that's what prompted me to write The Potter's Freedom. Now, nearly 20 years later, you look back and you go, you know, God knows what he's doing. We may lose perspective, but God really knows what he's doing. And he does. And he does. And so, yeah, you look at what has happened and you look at what happened in that situation. And then sadly, just over the past number of months, the recognition, I think of anything, to be honest with you, I think of anything, hold on just one second here. Okay. All right. I think of anything that when I look down the road, the thing that concerns me the most, and I'm not talking about global church issues here, the continued rise of totalitarian secularism remains, in my mind, the greatest challenge to the church in Western countries. It's totalitarianism. It is an abs. You must. Well, the cake decision that came down yesterday. Now that we all know that that's going to be adjudicated in light of the Supreme Court decision that will come out in June. So it's a temporary thing. But the couple up there is supposed to pay $135,000, for emotional distress. Gross injustice, absurd on its face, and yet this is what we are facing in Western culture. So when we're talking about global issues, in Western countries, that's what we're facing, the church is facing, secularism, totalitarianism. We will shut you down, we will silence you. That, to me, is the greatest threat. Obviously, militant Islam remains a great threat. I hear almost nobody talking about what's happening in Saudi Arabia, however. There's all sorts of odd stuff happening right now. And I don't claim to know, understand all of it, but at least I follow people, Muslims primarily, who have a finger on the heartbeat. And there's some stuff going on in Saudi Arabia, okay? That's really, really interesting that the West seems to be ignoring primarily. But obviously, militant Islam, especially in Africa, remains a major, major issue. I think of my dear friends in South Africa. Oh my goodness, that nation is in trouble. The corruption of the government there, the ANC, they are losing people right and left. Anybody who can get an education, get out, is getting out. And that's just dragging the entire nation down. So there's all sorts of things to think about along those lines. But when I look at things closer to home, when I look at the general movement with which I have been identified for my entire ministry, you know, I know we stink at this, but guess what 2018 is? 2018 is the 35th anniversary of the founding of Alpha and Omega Ministries. 35 years. And some of you are going, yeah, you look like it. yeah. And everyone in the studio audience is going, they couldn't even help themselves. 35 years, a little longer than most folks have been involved in apologetics ministry. And for that period of, almost all of that period of time, but especially since writing books like Drawn by the Father, God's Sovereign Grace, so on and so forth, we have been a part of the Calvinistic branch, the Reformed movement. And things are a change. And I was a Calvinist before it was popular to be a Calvinist. And now it's become quote unquote popular among, at least in some areas. But I'm very, very concerned because it seems to me that in some ways the Lord is removing his hand of blessing from our movement. And what I mean by that is we are seeing men arise in our midst who lack the spirit that had always motivated the proclamation of the doctrines of grace. I was going to grab it and I forgot to do so. But Rich will remember that back in 86, when I first introduced the people in the ministry to the doctrines of grace, it wasn't long before I then introduced them to a little pamphlet written by a fiery preacher, Albert Martin, called The Practical Implications of Calvinism. And it is a Spurgeon-esque reminder that you can cross all your T's and dot all your I's doctrinally, but if it doesn't impact the way you live and how you interact with other believers, then it's all fury signifying nothing. It's emptiness. And in fact, only bring greater condemnation upon you for having so much light and sinning against it. We've often talked about the cage stage. Well, it seems like there are people now that are saying, you know, that cage stage thing needs to be where we are all the time. And I suppose we have to ask the question, well, have those of us who have been teaching on these subjects for so long just been missing the boat? Have we not been clear on this? I suppose that's a possibility, but I also recognize that Reformed theology has ebbed and waned in the history of the church as a part of God's blessing or the withdrawal of that blessing. We can never assume that God is simply going to continue to bless his people. God has a purpose. I mean, I've said it, and I'll say it again, a healthy, discerning, loving, gracious Christian church is a blessing on any nation. It's a blessing on any nation. And what happens when God wants to bring his wrath against a nation? You know, we always sit around going, well, the church failed to do this, or the church failed to do that. What if it's just God is withdrawing his blessing upon a nation, and so by his spirit, he does not bless the proclamation of the gospel with as many converts? You can't look back on the history of England and look at England today and not see that that happens. And so what we're called to do in the midst of that is to be faithful, no matter what. But sometimes that means faithfulness in plowing very hard, rocky ground. Very hard, rocky ground. Well, anyway, it seems like there is a sudden manifestation of a hard-edged, imbalanced, immature, constantly cage-stage Calvinism. And for years, non-Calvinists have painted us all in that way. If you even start to say, well, it says in John 6, you horrid Calvinists. Okay, all right, we're all used to that. Got it. But now I'm seeing it. And, well, I'll give you an illustration. I had a pastor write to me just a couple days ago. And he told me about something that had happened in his church. I'm not going to give any details, but just the gist of the conversation, just in standing around, you know how you stand around church and talk with people? This man makes the statement, well, I sure hope R.C. Sproul is with the Lord, but it doesn't look hopeful. Now, if that was stated in almost any context, in almost any church, at least Reformed church, I can get that in a Wesleyan holiness church or in some radical, you know, hyper-Arminian context where they, you know, the people who constantly put out YouTube videos about R.C. Sproul, you know, never read a book he wrote, but they know he's that Calvinist guy. And so I get that. They were saying he wasn't going to heaven for a long time. This is in a ostensibly Reformed church. And after some of the other gentlemen standing around pick their dentures back up off the ground and go, what do you mean? The gentleman's response was, well, he was a tolerant Calvinist like James White. Where did this come from? What has brought this on? It's astounding. But and it's frightening. It's sad to see. It's sad to see this kind of thing taking place. But it is taking place. And again, when we look back 5 years, 10 years from now, if we ask ourselves the question now, Lord, how can we respond to this in a way that glorifies you, in a way that edifies your people, if we can respond to this, will this provide a needed corrective? Will this provide a needed righting of the ship, balancing of the payload, shall we say? Will we be able to look back and go, man, if it hadn't been for those hotheads that had completely lost balance on stuff, then this might have happened, or that might, or that person wouldn't have been able to get that position and have such a great impact upon others. Who knows? I don't know. And even if none of that ever happens, even if 10 years from now, it's just gotten worse and we don't see anything positive, we're called to remain faithful no matter what the situation is. No matter what the situation is. Now, is it enjoyable to have your name used like that? I mean, it's really hard to understand exactly where these people are coming from, because when you actually sit down, if they will even sit down and actually start pushing through things, you find all sorts of false assumptions, and it doesn't matter what you've done your entire life. It just matters right now. You need to condemn the same people I condemn. And you need to look like me, talk like me. There is a deep, deep streak of the worst of fundamentalism in this mindset. That's why I was talking about fundamentalism last week. What I said about fundamentalism got grossly twisted out of context. I mean, on a level of self-deception that's astounding by certain people out there. But the point is that there is a mindset that says you need to look like me, act like me, talk like me, condemn everybody I condemn. And it's the separationism idea. You cannot be friends with anyone that I am not friends with. And if you are, then you become my enemy. That kind of attitude will destroy the reform movement in the United States. It will destroy it. And the funny thing is, the people that are promoting it are the very ones saying, we're saving the movement. There can be no doctrines of grace without grace. Without grace, all you're left with are doctrines. The Pharisees had lots of doctrines, but they didn't have the heart of the matter. So, to me, this seems to be one of the biggest issues. I mean, it just seems to me that so many in what is broad, has been broadly called evangelicalism are so willing to and so easily distracted by baubles and bangles. There are movements afoot amongst some of our greatest leading names that are extremely troubling. Extremely troubling. But how do you address those things? Do you address those things by firebombing them personally? Or do you address those things by positively presenting a counterpoint that is so rich and deep in biblical truth that those whom the Lord blesses with ears to hear will hear? We could become extremely frustrated. Extremely frustrated if we come to the conclusion that it's us up to us to right the ship. This is God's doing. These are God's days. God's still in charge. He's still on his throne. We are called to speak the truth. You can either do that in a consistent, deeply biblical, rich way, soaked in grace, and trust him with the results. Don't put him on some kind of chart like they have for, you know, the old church growth charts they used to have in the Southern Baptist Convention, where you need to have this percentage of growth in Sunday school at this time, or you just ain't doing things right, or we need to double how many times we're going on knocking on doors. And, you know, if someone comes once and fills out a card, I don't care if they tell you not to keep coming back. You keep going back this many times. No, I'm not talking about that. We need to be faithful and leave the results in God's hands. And when you see that one person that's been greatly blessed, boy, that one person's testimony better be enough for you for quite some time, because that may be all God gives to you. I'm afraid there's a lot of folks that unless they see the numbers, unless they see, oh, we're winning the war, I just want to serve Christ. And if it is not Christ's intention for there to be huge, massive crowds following after his truth as he brings judgment against a people, I either have to accept that or I have to start making false converts. And we've already seen what that does. We've already seen what that does. We've already seen the use of all the programs and all everything else. We see it happening right now. Why do you think so many of us have been talking about what Andy Stanley has been saying? Well, we've got to do it this way. We got to do what happened to trusting the Lord and the power of the Word and the power of the Spirit? Word and Spirit, nothing's changed. Oh, much has changed. Well, yeah, okay. As I said in Wittenberg, as I said in the Castle Church, the audience we're addressing is less spiritually ready to hear the truth than the peasants of Wittenberg were at the time of the Reformation. They knew they lived in God's world. We're dealing with people who think that all of this around us, all this complexity, all this beauty, the beauty of life itself, just happened. We actually have, I think, a harder road to hoe than they did. Doesn't change the fact we're called to be faithful. Doesn't change the fact we're called to be faithful. And so, I am not one of those people that goes, this is what I see coming in 2018. All sorts of stuff happened this year that none of us could have predicted. That none of us saw coming. There are some people who are very good at marking trends and things like that. I'm not one of them. Not even going to go there. All I know is we're called to be faithful to the message, and we're called to continue to believe that God uses that message to draw his people to himself. Therefore, we have to adapt to the situations we're facing. I've been saying for years, I fully expect our freedoms of expression to come under, they are already under attack. What happens if the Supreme Court abandons the fundamental freedom of religious freedom in the United States? It could happen in this session. I mean, I really think this one case could be enough. We already know that almost, I mean, look at the situation of Trinity Law School up in Canada. The totalitarians know if you control the judiciary, control the judges, mold them into your worldview, it doesn't matter what constitutions or anything else say, because they can be molded like Play-Doh into what we want. And so all they need is a decision like this Supreme Court decision to start seeing all sorts of applications, which means we need to shut down hate speech, which is anything we have to say. And I've quoted it before, but remember what John Adams said. The Constitution of the United States is meant for a moral and religious people. It is wholly unfit for the governance of any other. Well, what that means is the assumption of the founders was a judge would actually judge based upon the Constitution. We already know that's a joke today. They don't. All you need to do is give them just a little bit of ammunition. And we're no longer sitting here talking to you. And the proclamation of the church have to start making that decision. Are we going to start meeting in homes? We're going to have to start doing the same thing that Christians do all around the world in other places and meet in private and have to know who's there. Always wondering who the KGB agent is. What do we do then? Those are all questions that I hope we're not facing in 2018, but we need to be thinking about the trends that lead those directions and praying that we will use the freedom that we have now not to have wars with one another, but to focus upon what really matters, what's really centrally important. that's certainly what we want to do over the next year, whatever that brings, whatever time we are given. Be faithful to what God calls us to do. Sometimes that's weird stuff like yesterday's program. I mean, over 2 hours on Black Hebrew Israelism's attempt to get rid of Matthew 28:19 and the resultant textual critical issues. Yeah, okay. We do some weird programs. No two ways about it. But that needs to be done. Hebrew Israelism is growing. Somebody's got to address it. We can't address everything, but if you've got someone around who knows it, we'll do it. But obviously, we need you to stand with us during this time. You have probably figured out by now that when you watch Dividing Line, you're not going to be spending much time hearing fundraising. I always hearken back to this guy I knew back in the 1980s where I, you know, 25 to 50% of the entire airtime was nothing more than a guilt trip about what you did or did not give that particular ministry, because without that particular ministry, the entire kingdom of God was going to collapse. He's not really around much anymore, but that's not how we are. And every once in a while, I just remind everybody, we're not that way, not because we don't have needs, it's just that's we're not that way. Some people assume that because we ever talk about means, we've just got everything locked up, we had somebody dump a huge ton of money on us, and it doesn't work that way. So yeah, we do need you to stand with us, and in fact, at this point in time, with the slander that is now becoming so prevalent, even in the Reform community, need you more than ever. If that kind of stuff bothers you, then stand with the people that aren't doing it rather than the people that are. Keep those things in mind. So we kick off next year, starting right where we left off. There's no vacays, no holidays, right back at it. There's so many things to deal with. Got to get back to the church history stuff. Got to get back to Ijaz Ahmed's video that I stopped in the middle of, and I've done that many times before and can't do that. So many things to continue to get to on the program. But we especially need your support, your prayers, as we try to remain faithful. I'm dystopian. Okay, well, I just happened to look over at the chat channel, and then I thought I was wearing a kooji. How can you be dystopian if you're when you're wearing something like this? I don't know. But anyway. Pray that we'll continue to have the freedom to do this program, to address the subjects we need to address. And do be praying for our country, be praying for that Supreme Court decision. Let's be honest, even if it goes the right way, and we hope that it does, the other side will not stop. They just consider that a delay. They will continue to bring case after case after case, specifically for the purpose of establishing a totalitarian mindset. That's what they want. And the church needs to be prepared for that. So there's the year in review. Next time, next Tuesday, we will be starting a whole new year, 2018. Amazing. That's a number I... Back when I was... Well, I've been married almost 36 years now. 2018 sounded like a long time down the road, and here it is. It will be 2020 before you know it, and I still remember Y2K. Remember that? Everything was going to die. We were all going to die. All the lights were going to shut off. We're going to be Fred Flintstone on January 2nd, and here we are. We somehow managed to survive all of it. So there you go. Thanks for listening to The Dividing Line today, folks. Like I said, we'll be back on Tuesday, right after New Year's. So don't celebrate too heartily, because we'll be back the next day right here on the program. We'll see you then. God bless.